We talk a lot about goal weights on the show, but how do you pick one? And is that your ideal weight? We'll go over the methods to choosing your ideal weight. Plus, some comments have come in about the Time Magazine rebuttal episode. Very insightful stuff. We'll also answer your questions and much, much more here in episode number 76 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio. Jeff, what's going on?
Well, would you believe it? Right now, it's the end of September, and right now it's the warmest day of the year that we've had in Calgary. It is just beautiful weather. So I am actually sitting here hot doing a show. But how are you doing down there, Russ?
Well, it is hot here, too. It's one of those called Indian summers. Is that correct? But it is just boiling here in my room. I've got the door closed, fan on, and hopefully I won't sweat to death here before the end of the show.
So how did you do this week with weight loss?
It was a good week. Down here on my way in this morning, 233.2. So it's about, what is that, a little over a pound of weight loss for this last week.
Well, that is great to hear because now you've got some momentum 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, hopefully it continues. But let me go over my goals here. My eating goals, say it was a good 9 out of 10. Had a few snacks and things in there. Exercise goals, I get 9 out of 10. Doing all my workouts and getting them in on time. And my motivation for the week, a good 10 out of 10. I just recently changed the picture over on the hosts page over at fattofitradio.com. Take a look at that. It was the picture I had there previously. It was from around December 2006. Actually, it was taken on Christmas Day, I believe. And then in September, just a few weeks ago, I was camping with my son, and we took a picture before we left the campsite. And I put that as my Facebook page, and I thought, you know what? I got to update my picture on the website and just see what it looks like. So I did a great side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, that picture is really shocking. You can really tell that you've lost weight. It's really obvious.
Well, I have a neck now, which is good. And really, I called my head, it was like a peanut shaped because it was big and then kind of went in at the temples. And then my cheeks were just giant. I had a peanut shaped head and now I've got actually a regular shaped head. So I appreciate that part of the weight loss.
All right. Sounds good. Well, let's move on to our email and comment section. And the first email came in from Shannon.
Yeah, and she wrote here, "Hi, Jeff and Russ. Love the show. I'm glad there's a realistic fitness show out there that doesn't plug all the gimmicks. Anyway, my question is, I've been on my lifestyle change mission for about 6 months and have already lost 35 pounds. I recently joined a gym, and in addition to my normal cardio, I've been doing strength training twice a week. Since then, I've not seen any real weight loss on the scale. Is this normal? I haven't regained any weight, and my measurements are going down, so just wanted your take on this. My main goal is not necessarily weight loss, but fitness, and the weight loss should be a byproduct of the new healthy lifestyle. Thanks for all your help, and I can't wait till the next show."
Well, to answer your question, yes, this is perfectly normal if you're losing weight correctly. We've said this many times that your goal in weight loss isn't just really a number on the scale, but the size and shape of your body, as well as being healthy. In reality, people would do much better if they just threw out their scale and only measured body fat percentage and then did some basic circumference measurements around their body. When you first start doing resistance training, your body responds right away and you can expect to put on some muscle right away. Muscle is much denser and heavier than fat, so only a little muscle gain will be the same as quite a bit more fat that you've lost, so you may not see it on the scale. Now, this happens right at the start, and it does get harder to put on muscle as your body gets used to lifting weights, though. You have the attitude that will truly get you on the right track to losing weight and keeping it off for a lifetime. And another thing, we are planning to do a show on the Biggest Loser TV show in a little while, but if you want to be successful for the long term, do everything absolutely opposite from what they do on the show. Don't get caught up in focusing on losing big numbers every week. Don't work out 4 to 7 hours per day. Don't push yourself past what is medically safe for you or your current body. If you do about 5% of the effort that they do on that show, you can easily have lifelong weight loss success for the rest of your life. I just said this on a recent show, but you don't have to work harder. You just have to work smarter.
All right, good advice. Great job there, Shannon, on the weight loss so far. Keep up the great work. We have a second email here from listener Amy, and she wrote here, "I've been listening to your podcast since shortly after I had my first child in March. Thanks for all the work you put into the show. Every episode has so many tidbits I can put to use. One that really stuck with me was the idea, if you must mindlessly munch on something, then to choose a negative calorie food like carrots. So here I am on a Friday night celebrating that my week is over with a stack of magazines to read and a bag of carrots.
And she continues, surprisingly, just the motion of munching is relaxing, and I'm finding that it's really not the chocolate or the calorie-laden whatever that I am craving. Hopefully, I'll be able to do away with the emotional munching altogether, but in the meantime, thanks for keeping it real and giving real alternatives like that instead of something crazy like cravings hit, go out running, or sprinting.
Yeah, that's great, Amy. You know, I did the same thing today. I had a bag of carrots, and, you know, as I'm sitting at my desk at the office thinking, boy, I'd like to have, you know, some kind of juicy snack of some kind. And, you know, I'm just eating the carrots and realize, hey, I'm actually full from these carrots and the craving is gone. So good job with that.
And I'm thinking that we've given out hundreds and hundreds of tips over the last, you know, couple years. And really, how many people use all of them? Well, nobody does. And maybe I only use 20 or 30% of them. But as long as they really hit home with you and you follow them and they have a benefit for you, that's all that really counts. Let's move on to our next couple items. And they're both dealing with show number 74, where we talked about that Time article that said exercise really won't help you with weight loss. And here's just some samples of what people are saying about that episode.
Yeah, here Vicky wrote, hi, I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of months now, and I love what you are doing. You're really providing a wonderful service for the millions of overweight people in the Western world. Two items in your latest show provoke me to write you. First, the Time article. I live in Europe, and Time is my major source of news from the United States. But like you and many others, I was furious when I read the article. I don't need studies to prove the article wrong. When I was a teenager living in California, I didn't even know anyone who was obese. Yes, there were a few people I would see in the streets who were a bit overweight, but obesity was something for the circus.
At that time, I lived 1.5 miles from my high school, a distance considered too close to provide bus service, so I walked. In addition, we had phys ed classes every single day. We didn't have remote controls for the TV back then either, which I've always considered to be a fat factor. Today, Europeans don't have big parking lots in front of every store, and gasoline is at least twice as expensive, so they walk a lot more than Americans. Hence, they are a lot slimmer. Although that is starting to change as American fast food and other influences spread. It infuriates me that when people look for lame excuses like suggesting the problem is genetic, as you often point out, it's not genetic, it's lifestyle.
Secondly, when I go back to the States to visit my family, I am always shocked when I go shopping. When I was in my 30s, I weighed 115 pounds and wore a size 10. Now, at 64, I am 135, am overweight by European standards, but by American standards, I'm relatively slim and wear a size 8. Go figure. I find your show very motivational, and I would like to get down to 120 pounds. But when I do, how will I buy clothes when I'm in the States? I'll probably have to look for clothes in the children's section. I don't know if I'll find anything appropriate for a woman of my age. Keep up the good work.
She had some really interesting points there about how it's different from Europe and the United States.
The last item here was from Tom, and he wrote in about how these media companies sensationalize their stories and headlines when they put together these stories for their magazines.
And I'll just start partway down in his email here. And he says, this is a microcosm of how these old print media outlets operate. And what better way to demonstrate that than through an apolitical article? This guy is doing several things here. They always do with their stories. And he's talking about the Time article that says exercise isn't necessary to lose weight. Number one, they come up with an idea based on their feelings of how things work and how it works for them personally. Number two, they present the idea in the most sensational way possible, like the cover. Number three, they then extrapolate anecdotal data from their little self-absorbed world to everyone. And number four, they cherry-pick various sources to reinforce their ideas or feelings about things. This is the MO for almost every journalist. So, regardless of what your politics are, can you imagine what these people are doing to political news, which is supposed to be their forte? It is important that everyone learn that there is no objective journalism, and always question what you read from these people, especially the entrenched old guard. And all that you really can trust is people like you, out of the mainstream media machine, unaffiliated, and back up every statement with scientific studies. Kudos.
Yeah, it seems like anymore when you go to one of these websites that's affiliated with a big media company like Time or Newsweek, that they really just looking for those clicks, the sensational headlines that get you to go to the article so you click on an advertisement. It's all they care about is advertising. And the more sensational or infuriating the title or the article, the more people are incensed to go read it and to react. Meanwhile, they don't really care. They're just looking for those ad dollars.
Yeah, that's so true. And that was just a really good summary of how things are working. And I looked at some articles just in other magazines, and they do seem to follow that profile. So that's really good that Tom found this big picture and could explain it to us like that.
Yeah, we want to thank Tom and Vicky, Amy, and Shannon all for their questions and emails. Really appreciate those. And you all can get your questions and comments to us by a few ways. The first is by leaving a comment on the website at fattofitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
You can also leave us a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can join our free support group at fattofitsupport.com.
Okay, Jeff, it's time for your favorite part of the show. It's the Web Report. What's going on with that?
Well, today I have an article from Discover Magazine, and we'll leave a link in the show notes, and it's entitled 20 Things You Didn't Know About Fat. Now, some of the things are pretty interesting, but they're really not backing up their statements, and I'm not sure where they're getting some of their numbers, so I don't know how accurate it is, but there are some really interesting things in here. So, for example, people who regularly eat dinner or breakfast in restaurants double the risk of becoming obese. That makes sense. The root of the problem? Depending on gender and how active they are, adults should eat between 2,000 and 3,000 calories per day. U.S. agriculture now produces 3,900 calories of food per inhabitant per day. Let's see, another one. People who lose just 10% of their weight report significant improvements in their sex lives.
Hey-o.
And here's a good one. This one was pretty interesting. Over the course of a year, about 10% of an adult's fat cells die. Alas, the body promptly replaces them. Because remember, there's that myth that you can never regrow fat cells? Well, it happens all the time.
Yeah, we found out that if you overeat enough, you will grow new fat cells.
Here's an interesting statistic about trying to lose fat. It says, we're trying. Each year, nearly $50 billion is spent on diet programs.
That is a big industry.
Oh, and this is a good one. Your brain is about 70% fat. Another point talks about liposuction. It may make you prettier, but not healthier. Liposuction doesn't remove fat from around the internal organs, so your fat-related health risks are unchanged.
Yeah, it's taking care of that subcutaneous fat, which, you know, makes you look, you know, pudgy or bad, but it's that the visceral fat that in between the organs, and that really is the more dangerous kind of fat.
And the last one here, think you have a spare tire? Whales are wrapped in fat, a thick layer of blubber, as vital insulation against the cold. Some whales have blubber up to 20 inches thick, so it could be worse. Now, there's about another 10 or 12 items, and if you're finding these interesting, you can just go to fattofitradio.com, and we'll have a link so you can read all of them from Discover Magazine. So, Russ, what do you have for us this week?
Well, Jeff, I am uber excited. I found two awesome weight loss products I just wanted to share with everybody. The first one is called the Snuggie Sauna. It's like a Snuggie, you know, you have those little forward-facing blankets with arms. This one uses infrared technology. And you can burn 600 calories in 15 minutes. It looks amazing. Got to check that out. And the other one, oh, this doctor is now doing this procedure on your tongue. He'll implant this device in your tongue that makes it really hard to eat and painful. So every time you eat some food, you get this negative reinforcement, and then you don't eat as much. Isn't that awesome, Jeff?
Well, Russ, I think you're an idiot.
Well, yes, that would be, if I actually thought all those things, that way I would be an idiot. But you know, this is the kind of stuff that comes across my desk. I've got a Google alert that sends me all these weird things that are happening about weight loss out on the internet. And these are two of the items that I came across my desk this week. I'm like, this cannot be true. There's also, by the way, a cosmetic surgeon that's doing this tongue implant technique. And this other one, a little tongue-in-cheek, that this Snuggie was actually a good way to lose weight. But they're legitimate articles that people are looking at, reading, going, oh, yeah, I'm going to get one of these Snuggie saunas. So beware when you look at an item or news item, a blog article, that, you know what, sometimes they're not always giving you the best advice.
Well, every time that I see an article like this or a new product like this that is so obviously ridiculous, it's not that I'm really trying to bust them and show that this is just garbage and this wouldn't work and you shouldn't pay for this because there's no science behind it. It's so over the top that I'm not even going to bother wasting my time. But what it really shows to me is people's desperation to lose weight. And they get in such a point that even if it seems ridiculous, it just might work. And those people will buy this sort of product. And I think that's just kind of a sad state for a lot of people.
Well, it's how many of that $50 billion that you mentioned is this kind of passive weight loss technique? Now, these aren't $50 billion being spent on weights or gym equipment or anything like that. This is people buying those vibration machines and, you know, these amazing sweatsuits and these snuggy saunas. You know, there are things that they don't have to do any work, and they're trying to get the easy way out. That's where really a big part of that $50 billion is going, and that's just the sad part.
Well, I'm just looking at your weight loss detox destination Snuggy Sauna article, and if you could really burn 600 calories in 15 minutes and improve your blood circulation, promotes lymphatic drainage and cellular renewal, increases metabolism, burns calories without lactic acid production, promotes better sleep and detoxifies the body from heavy metals, including mercury and cadmium, all in 15 to 20 minutes, if that was possible, wow, we wouldn't have to do this show at all.
Exactly. So again, be careful when you're reading articles out there, and especially with that almighty dollar, and you know, don't give it to just anybody.
All right, well, let's move on to our feature section. And the feature section this week is all about how much should you really weigh?
Yeah, you've heard us talk about goal weights on many episodes of the show. And as recently as, 2 weeks ago, I set a new weight loss goal of 196 pounds. That's a 100-pound weight loss since the beginning of the podcast here. But how do we come up with that number? Generally, there are four methods you can pick an ideal weight with. There's the insurance tables of height and weight. There's the muscle-to-fat ratio, the waist-to-hip ratio, and the old standard, the body mass index, or BMI.
So we're going to go over these methods and then give you our way, which we think you should use to choose your ideal body weight. And we're going to start with the worst ways and move on to the best ways. So we're going to start with the Metropolitan Life Tables of Height and Weight for People. And these are the tables that first came out in 1943, and the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company introduced their standard height-weight tables for men and women. The tables were revised slightly in 1983. They were called desirable weights, which would indicate those persons with the lowest mortality rates. However, the phrase ideal weight gradually became associated with these tables in common usage, even though the word ideal was not specifically published with the tables.
So here, looking at this table, the link Jeff mentioned, we've got the height, small frame, medium frame, and large frame for both men and women. And so depending on your height, you just go across the table, say here, I'm going to go for myself. I am 6'2", and I'm going to say I'm a large frame. I don't have any basis for this, but it's going to tell me I need to weigh between 172 and 197 pounds.
Now, you have no basis, but really, if you checked out your frame size by doing your elbow measurements or your wrist circumference, if you were a small frame, Russ, you'd need to weigh between 155 pounds and 168 pounds, which is quite a huge difference for you.
I can't imagine weighing 155 pounds. That would just be a tiny little man.
But the point being, these tables, they're started in the 40s, and they're really not accurate for many people. There's such a variation in people that they're just almost useless. These tables were originally created for insurance risk, because they knew if someone was severely underweight or severely overweight, they were more of a risk. But really, how they got the numbers in the middle doesn't make a lot of sense. I know that for me, I don't think I could really weigh what they want me to. I remember seeing these back when I was in high school, and I was supposed to weigh 144 pounds, and I remember dieting down to 144 pounds, which was really the skinniest I've ever been in my life, and I really can't imagine losing weight to go down to fit into these tables myself.
Well, that's why we started here with the worst idea for setting an ideal weight would be this particular table of information. So let's get on to our second one, which is the waist to hip ratio. And this one is often linked to cardiovascular problems. A lot of times when you talk about this visceral fat that I mentioned earlier, it creates a large abdomen, and that's the worst kind of fat. So this waist to hip ratio kind of takes that into account. Now, for the males, a waist to hip ratio of less than 9 here poses a lower risk of cardiovascular and health problems. 0.9 to 0.99, you have a moderate risk. And 1.0 or over, you have a high risk of cardiovascular problems. Female-wise, less than 0.8, again, you're a low risk. 0.8 to 0.89 is moderate risk, and 0.9 and over for high risk of cardiovascular problems. I don't know, Jeff, I haven't seen a correlation between this and weight. It's really just that hip ratio.
That's right. And people are all built so differently that especially for the women, this might not make a lot of sense if they have an hourglass figure naturally. They may seem to be overweight in this thing.
Right. Some people have a pear shape or an apple shape. And back in season one, we talked about all the different types of shapes you might come in. And this doesn't really take that into account.
Well, I think if it's a big ballpark figure, you can pretty much just look at someone and know what their waist to hip ratio is. You don't really need to do circumference measurements and figure it out. But it is a little bit better than what the insurance tables were for sure. But let's move on to the third indicator, and this is the most popular, at least everyone has heard about this, and this is the body mass index. And this only relates your height to your weight. And it's the same number for men and women, boys, girls, and it's really almost a useless factor for just one single person. It does make sense if you're comparing all Americans to all Europeans. You could take an average of all the people, and that makes sense if you're comparing large populations. But for an individual person, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
So we talked about the life insurance tables above at the Met Life Insurance Company. And now when I got insurance, life insurance, this was one of the categories where, because I was obese at the time I got life insurance, I had to pay more. So this is one of those things that, while it's not really supposed to be used for an individual, it often is, because that's the easiest way somebody can look at a table, put in your weight, and find out how much more you're going to pay for life insurance.
That's true. Let's go over the numbers quickly here. People with a BMI of less than 18.5 are considered underweight. Now, the one that most people want to know is, what is the ideal? And the ideal is between 18.5 and 25. Now, if you're in between 25 and 30, you're classed as overweight. And if you are over 30, you're classed as obese. Now, a lot of people know all about these numbers, and it's really easy to find out your BMI. You can just search on the internet for BMI calculator, and there's a million out there. But talking about BMIs, here's a quote from the organization called Shape Up America, which is an anti-obesity initiative launched by the former U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. C. Everett Koop. And he said, the use of BMI alone leads to two common forms of misclassification. The first is the judgment of highly muscular individuals with a high BMI as being overfat when they are not. The disease risk faced by these individuals is significantly lower than BMI would indicate. At the same time, using BMI can fail to identify people at increased risk who are in the healthy BMI zone of 18.5 to 24.9, but have elevated body fat content. So what he's saying is, people who have a little bit more muscle than the average person, BMI will look like they're fat. And then people who are within the what's considered the healthy BMI range can be what we call the skinny fat people. They have a very high percentage of fat, but not very much muscle. So they're really light, but they're kind of puffy, I guess would be the word if you think about it.
So what's interesting, Jeff, is currently I just did my found out what my BMI is and my current weight. And funny enough, I just peeked into the overweight category from the obese. So that's, maybe I'll get a break on my insurance now. Who knows? But my goal weight of 196 pounds will still be a BMI of 25.22, still in the overweight category.
Well, Russ, hold that thought, because we're going to talk about that in just a second. But let's go over the next way, and that's with your muscle to fat ratio. And this is clearly the best way to determine how much you should weigh. I'll continue with Dr. Koop's position here, and he states that one's body fat percentage is superior to the currently accepted body mass index as a measure of healthy weight. His advisory to all physicians states that body fat percentage is as significant an indicator of health status as blood pressure and blood cholesterol levels. In fact, body fat percentage is a more direct assessment of a healthy weight, because it is able to distinguish fat from muscle.
So there is a bare minimum of fat that you want to keep in your body. That's going to be called your essential fat. And there's an American Council on Exercise has some recommended percentages for these, as well as the total fat in your body. Now, the essential fat for women is about 10 to 12%. And for men, it's 2 to 4%, so much lower.
That's right. And if you go below that, this is the essential fat that is cushioning things like your heart and your internal organs that you really need to survive. Having a fat level below this is simply dangerous.
Right. And so then there's total fat in your body. And there's a couple of categories here we're probably going to be most interested in. That's non-athletes that are classified as fit. And that's For men, it's going to be 14 to 17% fat, and for women, 21 to 24%.
They also have an acceptable range, and for men, that would be between 18 to 25% fat, and for women, 25 to 31% fat. Now, there are some other categories, you know, for athletes and overweight and obese, but we're just going to keep you with those few numbers to keep it simple for right now. Now, one thing that we found is a chart that links the relationship between BMI and body fat percentage, because a lot of people will know what their BMI is and they'll think they're healthy, but this is a chart that shows if your BMI, for example, is in the healthy range between 18.5 and 25, but your body fat percentage is high, it'll say you're in a high-risk category. Or if you're in a healthy BMI range and your body fat is too low, it'll show that you're in an increased risk zone. So it's pretty interesting. It's really hard to describe this chart, but if you do know your BMI and your body fat, you can take a look at this chart and see if you actually are healthy. It'll tell you if you're just a muscular person, or it will tell you if you're starting to become one of these skinny fat people.
So Jeff, what are we going to suggest for everybody to do to find out their ideal weight?
Well, I'm going to give a two-step process, and this might not apply to all people, but number one, I would use your BMI to get your initial ballpark figure and use the BMI of 25, which is the upper range of ideal. Now, I know it's a horrible way, and we're aware of that, but this is just a starting point if you have a lot of weight to lose. In the last show, our guest was 5'10" tall and weighed 370 pounds. To get to a BMI of around 25, he will need to weigh about 175 pounds, which is a weight loss of 200 pounds. So now you have your starting point. This could just be your first initial tentative goal. So number two, once you know the ballpark area of how much you should weigh, then switch to body fat percentage. Use one of the many ways that you can to measure your body fat. We suggest a body fat scale that does both your weight and your body fat at the same time. And we have talked about these scales on previous shows. One thing, though, is make sure that you take an average body fat reading over a few days, because the scales tend to fluctuate a little bit based on your hydration level. And there is one other thing that I'd like to add, but this is for the people who are very, very keen and also good at math. If you know your current body weight and your current body fat percentage, you can actually backwards figure out what your weight would be at a lower body fat percentage. And this is assuming that you haven't lost any muscle while you were losing weight. And this can be done, but it isn't necessary. Maybe in the future we'll add a calculator to the website. What do you think, Russ?
I think that's definitely possible. As non-committal as that could be, it's definitely possible.
Okay. And one last point. Is it possible to set a weight loss goal without setting an actual goal weight? And the answer is yes. And in an ideal world, this would be the best way. Do I personally ignore how much I weigh? Well, no, I don't. I use it just as another measure along with my body fat level that I can use to keep myself accountable. So just to summarize what we suggest, check out what your BMI would be at 25. That's the upper range, just to get the big ballpark figure. And then once you start getting closer to that, it's really important to start measuring your body fat, because that is truly going to get you in that healthy range.
So if all those numbers didn't scramble your head enough, we're going to move on to our recipe of the week. And this time it is another egg recipe, scrambled egg burritos.
Now, oh, really, geez, Russ, you must have been working on that segue for hours.
You know what? It just comes to you. So last week we had, you know, the egg frittata, and I just wanted to highlight eggs as a thing, not just for breakfast, you can have anytime. And so scrambled egg burritos. So each one of these burritos is 328 calories. And the recipe here on the website is for a serving of four. So don't eat them all yourself. Share them with your family, with your friends. But check them out, because they look delicious. The scrambled egg burritos.
Yeah, this is something that I actually eat, but I don't use all these great ingredients. I just do it the easy way.
Yeah, you know what? It turns it from, you know, that quick and simple meal into, you know, an entire meal. So I'm going to do this. I'll have my kids eat some of these things, and hopefully they'll enjoy them as much as I will. But let's get on to our homework, Jeff. What do you want everybody to do at home to do this week?
Well, we have covered a lot of information about what your ideal weight should be. So the homework has to be to reevaluate your goals to see if you have set reasonable goals or if they are realistic in the first place. If you have no way to measure your body fat right now, find out that level. There are many ways to do it, and some are very inexpensive. You can just get some Skinfold calipers that are dirt cheap. If you are getting close to your goal weight, this becomes even more important to see if your goal weight is healthy for you.
All right, good homework. And Jeff, what's our quote for the week?
The quote this week comes from General Colin Powell, and he said, "There are no secrets to success. Don't waste time looking for them. Success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failure, loyalty to those from who you work, and persistence."
Excellent, excellent. Remember to take a look at the show notes over at fattofitradio.com for all the links for that recipe, for all those great articles. You want to get yourself that Snuggy Sauna, you'll find the link there. Again, that's over at fattofitradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.
Yeah, this is something that I actually will eat.
not compared to the other crap you recommend, Ross. Jeez.